Hello and welcome to Games with Garfield. I'm here with Scaff Elias.
Hello.
And Richard Garfield.
Present.
So what's going on with you two?
Not a lot. We've probably come out with an expansion for
an expansion.
Our game Spectromancer.
Wait. What's Spectromancer?
Well, Spectromancer is a computer game that Scaff and I designed with Alexei Stankevich. He's a Belarusian game designer that designed a couple games I really liked, and so we teamed up for Spectromancer, which we released a year and a half ago.
Yeah, about that. And his original game was called Astral Tournament, which we loved, and Spectromancer is an update of that game. Richard and I added a lot of stuff to it.
So how long did it take you to develop?
We worked on Spectromancer for a few months.
Yeah, it was spread out over a long period of time for various reasons. The actual work time was probably like 6 months or something on it.
Of course, as we said, the basic framework is Alexei's. He's a very talented designer. It superficially looks like a trading card game. It looks like Magic, in fact, but it's mechanically very distinct.
So do you want to tell me what the basic mechanics are? What's the basic game?
Astral Tournament came out at around a time when I was thinking about the best way to put Magic on the computer, and I was frustrated with the fact that Magic was an excellent card game, but it was not designed for computer. And at this point, along comes Alexei with Astral Tournament, which was a card game essentially designed for computer, and it was such a pleasure. It is very distinct, though, as I said, from Magic. One of the biggest distinctions is that you don't build a deck. There's a deck of 60 cards, and you're dealt 20 cards from that deck, and your opponent's dealt 20 cards from the same deck, so they can't overlap. And those cards are available to you for the entire duel. And each turn, your mana in five different categories augments. And so turn one, you'll have, say, three water, and turn two, you'll have four, and turn three, you'll have five, and then maybe you'll spend two of them and you'll go back down to three, but you've got five different categories, so you're balancing these and deciding which cards to play based on what you've been dealt, what your opponent's doing.
And it's really not, they're not so much cards that you play and get rid of as they are sort of abilities. I mean, when you're dealt your tableau of cards in the beginning, as Richard said, that doesn't change. And you can either cast a card or not if you have enough mana for it, but it never goes away. It's not quite true in Spectromancer that you're playing from the same deck. That's one of the changes
we
made.
So what did you add to it?
In Spectromancer, we added character classes. And so each person had four common, the earth, air, fire, and water were energies that everybody shared, and you drew from the same card pool there. But then you had a specialty. So there were six specialties. You could be the cleric, and you had life magic.
So you basically added some RPG elements?
Yeah, and there was a necromancer with death magic and a controller with control magic. Dominator with control magic. Illusionist
Dominator.
With illusion magic. The Insanium with chaos magic.
And, I think I still like Dominator best. I had a discussion with a friend that you could make any word sound more masculine by adding Ator to the end of it. I mean, try.
Oh, Ator?
Glitterator.
Oh, yeah.
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 So Richard would be a Gaminator.
Gaminator. Yeah.
Be careful, or I will Gaminate you. And there's Artificer with mech magic.
The right? Mech magic, that's right.
And it's, I wouldn't say so much RPG in that, you know, it's not like you're advancing in levels as so much as it is a little bit of personalizing your deck, so to speak. You're not gaining things over time so much as you're choosing, you know, and the equivalent of a trading card game would be choosing your colors or something like that.
It really is very interesting that you keep these cards the entire game, the powers you're dealt, because then when you're playing against somebody, it's very interesting speculating what they might have, and then once they play it, you know they have that all the time. So
you don't discard.
Right, there is no discard,
and so
you might choose not to play a card, a spell, a power, at a point that might be advantageous because you don't want to let your opponent know that you have it.
Right.
And so you save it for a little while and let them really overextend themselves and then show them that you have it and that they've been playing all wrong.
Yeah, across the game you get a better and better idea of what your opponent's hand is.
Sounds really fun. So what does the expansion add?
Well, we add three new powers.
We should point out a couple of things. It has, there was a solo campaign that you could go through, as well as player versus player. And while we really, really love the player versus player stuff for the reasons, you know, especially that Richard's saying, the solo campaign's kind of nice because it allows you to do some wacky things that are unfair that you couldn't do in player versus player.
Nobody ever cares if you're unfair to the computer.
Yeah, the poor
computer.
That's why. No. That's exactly why one day they will rise up.
I know.
They're remembering everything.
I know.
They know.
Hey, so, I apologize to my computer when I do something bad to it, just in case.
I make sure that they're burned and destroyed after I'm done with them so they can't communicate back to the others. It's also the other reason for a solo campaign is a lot of people don't like playing against other people.
Or they want to build up their confidence.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Build up your confidence. So the new version, asking what's extra, mm-hmm. there's... And you can play through the campaign with the different classes. And so that's actually pretty fun because they do play differently. And so the new expansion, by adding three more classes, you can play all those through the old campaign. And it adds a new campaign, which you can take either the old or new guys through. So there's a huge amount of extra single player content. And then on the multiplayer side, one of the cool things that we did is there's arenas now where when you challenge people in multiplayer play, there's generally a special rule in play.
What is that?
It changes all the time.
Oh, okay.
So the rule might be...
It's kind of a wild card.
Right. Every creature takes 1 point of damage per turn. So now all of a sudden that changes all your calculations of what was good and what was bad and when to play them. And then after a couple days... that basic setup changes again to something totally different. Everyone starts with one extra mana.
So what did you learn from designing the game itself that changed what you did in the expansion?
Well,
or did you get it right the first time?
Mostly it was right because, again, this was built off of this framework that was very strong. I wouldn't characterize changes from what we've learned, but additions for an audience that now knows our game and will appreciate more variety. So I think the new characters that have been added are more sophisticated in many ways. They sort of explore mechanics that are would be more complicated that I would put out in the first game. And also this idea of having a special arena that sort of satisfies the more experienced players want for some extra variety, whereas at the beginning I sort of wanted everybody playing the same game.
The difference between this and a trading card game is trading card games take a lot of time and money because, right. You know, you've got to buy the cards and it's great and it becomes a big, you know, a really rewarding hobby for people, but it is a hobby. I mean, you can't. It's difficult to dabble in those things. So purposefully, we wanted to set this up as...
Do you think you've lost anything in losing the collection mechanic?
This isn't... Spectromancer is not going to be, you know, your hobby for life, like Magic could be. But that's on purpose, because people have a lot of pressures on their time. I mean, what do we want? We want you to play Magic and love Magic. And then if you want a secondary game, you can't necessarily take on a second trading card game. That's a big
expenditure.
So this gives you a lot of the excitement of a trading card game in terms of the variety that appears in play and a lot of the mechanics, but it's not a huge investment. It's something you can do on the side.
So can you play the single player campaign in the expansion without having played the first game's single player campaign, or do you need to?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. I should say also, when it came out, actually one of the most the hardest things to explain to people on the forums and such was that it wasn't collectible. Many people recognized that that's what we were going for, but because the trappings are so reminiscent of a game like Magic, that people expected to be able to build decks. Mm-hmm. But the problem is, I mean, the mechanics of it don't really suit itself for that, so it's not something you can easily add and still have a good game. And again, it was something we were after. We were after something that was different. And those players that were looking for that seem to have lost track of the fact that historically games aren't collectible, right? And this is more in the design space of older games.
You mentioned that you view Spectromancer as a good secondary game for people who already play Magic. Is the audience a complete overlap, or is it, you know, a Venn diagram?
No, it's definitely not an overlap, because there's a lot of people that refuse to play Magic because of the lack of a strong single-player component, and which this has. So already, to begin with, you have that. And then there's people over the years that might have decided to stay away from trading card games that are more in line for a standard strategy game on the computer.
You could actually play this game it's different than Magic in that you have to really be engaged with a trading card game in a much more thorough way. But you could, Spectromancer or Astral Tournament, these are games that I could play forever, right? In the same sense that I can play Hearts forever. It's still, you know, Hearts doesn't get into the mind absorption level of a game like Magic or Dungeons and Dragons or something like that, but it can still entertain me for my whole life.
So would you say that Spectromancer has a lower barrier to entry as far as learning curve?
Is it easier to master sooner than Magic?
Yeah.
Yeah. And the audience right now is also very international, which is kind of interesting.
It's cool to go on the server and have people curse at you in foreign languages.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. I was surprised by how many, there were a lot of people from Egypt when I was first starting to play, but you probably know exactly where they came from because you...
I do have that breakdown, but it really is from all over. It's surprising.
That's very cool. So do you have any funny stories from the development process? Any behind the scenes?
Funny haha or funny strange?
Either.
Funny stories from the development process.
I mean, it sounds, from what you said, from how little time it actually took cumulatively, it sounds like it must have been a fairly easy development
process. Again, that's largely based upon the fact that Alexei had this game beforehand that was so strong. Yeah, so the total development time in the system, you know, if you think of it that way, was much longer than what we spent on it.
And unfortunately, the things that are least pleasant to live through at the time are the things that make good stories later. So the development process, I think, that you want for a game is probably not likely to generate a whole lot of...
Sure. On the business side of stuff, there were some difficulties because
it was horrible.
It switched through. Maybe it was going to be, we weren't going to publish it. We were going to be the developer. We eventually published it ourselves. And that whole transition process was difficult. But, you know, eventually we got there.
Yeah, so. Originally it was going to go up on like the Gen Con site, and they were going to be the prime hosts of it, and that fell through. That was our breakdown of responsibilities with our Belarusian partners. That was, you know, we were in charge of getting it up, and we found that to be a real chore. But we managed, and now we got it in a lot of places, and they've been wonderful partners.
It's on Steam, and the expansion is not yet up on Greenhouse, the Penny Arcade site, but the original was, and the expansion will be up there soon, and it's on the Impulse Stardock and a whole bunch of other GamersGate and a whole bunch of different
sites. So if somebody who's listening to this podcast,
they should
go to
www.spectromancer.com.
Is that the best place to get information?
That's our site.
Okay. I'm sorry, I didn't catch that.
I think that's www.spectromancer.com. But there's forums there, and you know, there's a lot of extra stuff there, so it might be.
So what demographic do you think?
And we
would
get a higher percentage at www.spectromancer.com.
So what demographic do you think would be people who would actually really enjoy this game who aren't already playing it?
Honestly, anyone that's ever liked computer strategy game. I really do think it's pretty close to that broad. It obviously is going to, because it has a fantasy IP, it's going to skew a little bit younger and probably a little bit more male than, you know, a generic, whatever, I don't know, Minesweeper.
but it's not a casual game.
It's not a casual game, but I'm never really sure of the definition of what constitutes a casual game or
not.
It is certainly easier to play, although again it's got a fantasy IP. Certainly easier to play than some games that are classified as casual games. So I don't really 100% understand that definition.
It's quick. It takes probably 10 minutes for a game, so you can play it very fast, which is one thing. And there's not time pressure. It's not like you've got to click fast or anything, which is also nice.
Yeah.
Each turn you only have a couple dozen decisions that you can choose between. It's not
right.
like a
so
vast
it is
amount.
Very much a strategy game, and there aren't any Twitch elements.
No Twitch. Yeah. No. It's a strategy game.
It's other than how fast you can get to www.spectromancer.com. I wouldn't call it a casual game. I don't mean to say that it might be. However, if someone said, I love casual strategy games, I would recommend it to them in a second. So,
is there such a thing as a casual strategy game?
There should be.
Yeah.
Is that the next project?
The more there can be, the better. I love strategy games, and I love casual games, and often the strategy games are too complicated. And so I'm constantly trying to figure out ways to make them more like Spectromancer.
I mean, I would call Solitaire a casual strategy game, or any of the versions of Solitaire.
Well, I mean, all games have some strategy, right? But when we talk about a strategy game, we're talking about a specific...
No, not... At least we don't.
Oh, okay.
Whack-a-mole doesn't have too much.
That's true.
It's not principle. There is a some strategy.
There is some strategy, but... in general, when I hear people talk about strategy games, they're talking about real-time strategy.
Well, this is specifically not real-time strategy. This is turn-based.
Right, and turn-based, of course, is an underrepresented genre.
Very.
Multiplayer turn-based is ridiculous. It's how little there is. Single-player turn-based, there's a bunch floating around. So one of the stories that that our highly sophisticated audience might appreciate is some of the balancing issues that we had with it. Like in Spectromancer, we did give out, you could play a third of the campaign for free, and you could play one race, one class online for free. So we gave them the cleric. And
I had one constraint that I asked for in the beginning, which is that whatever class we gave out for free, it shouldn't be clearly the best class. I don't care if it ended up being, tied for first with a whole bunch of other classes. But just not be like obviously the best class, so that maybe, there'd be a good reason. Yeah, to purchase.
I would think you would give out the weakest class free.
That feels bad. I mean, that wouldn't have been bad, but it would feel slimy. An average class.
A lot of times the classes that are not ultimately the strongest are the easiest ones to learn.
Right.
Taking in our RPGs, like a wizard is much harder to play, but as you get to know that how
the
to play that sort of
there
character.
Would be the warrior.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Yeah.
So
in previous editions of Dungeons and Dragons.
Yes. Well, there is no one in the current edition.
Yeah.
And
continue with the story.
Well, actually it began off pretty good. The cleric was it was really interesting to see how people responded to it. People assumed that the cleric was the worst.
Yes,
and that was
for sure.
Since it's free, it must be the worst. And people, complained that they had a disadvantage online because they were playing against people who had paid. They were playing the illusionist. They were playing the necromancer. Oh my gosh, we're overpowered and so forth. But of course, that wasn't our intent. We didn't think the cleric was. As far as we knew, the cleric was
average.
Average. That was what we expected it to be. That's what we designed it to be. But of course, as an audience grows in sophistication, the balances change. And at one point, we had a very good game player friend who said he thought the cleric was the best.
Yeah.
And he was pretty the top level players outside of him though did not think that. In the early days, they named other classes, but it was really interesting looking at the Alexei's data that he had gathered. We had graphs of how much each class had won against all the other classes, and had those also incorporate what level the players were. And so you'd see these crazy things like people would always say the necromancer was super powerful, and if you looked at low level players, the necromancer would clean their clocks, and then after a little while, you'd sort of learn how to play against the necromancer, and their winning streak would go way down. And other classes were just dogs, but then once you learned how to use them, they became much better. The cleric, as people learned how to play, was just a really well balanced class and could handle just about anything. So the more sophisticated the audience became, the better the cleric was. Is that how you saw the evolution?
Yeah, absolutely. Like at the very high levels of play, I think there were, my recollection is there were three really good classes near the top, and cleric was one of the three.
So when you started the story, you said that our highly sophisticated listeners would appreciate it, and I totally took that for sarcasm. I was expecting a story about, fart jokes or something, and you actually meant it.
That's because you don't have the faith in our listeners that we do.
I know.
I would say our estimates are that three out of the seven of our listeners are highly sophisticated.
Three out of the seven.
But there are two that appreciate fart jokes.
That's... And one of those actually is also in the highly sophisticated group.
Hey, there is nothing wrong with fart humor. Shakespeare knew this. We should all follow his example.
Absolutely.
Mark Twain certainly knew that.
Mark Twain certainly knew it. So did Benjamin Franklin.
Yeah, the other balancing is the cards themselves.
Thank you, Scott.
Sorry. Yeah, that was unbalanced.
Just because you say my name and they can't see what happened doesn't mean that everyone doesn't know it was you.
Oh, no. Well, I see where this is going. Sorry, Richard, you were saying?
Yeah, so the other balancing issue was balancing cards themselves, people's power. And people, there was a lot of complaints about individual cards. And it was really interesting to see them discussed on forums about how unbalancing these cards were and how the person who got dealt them always won. When Alexei, of course, was very attentive to all these and collected more data than I ever expected him to collect, and he would say, "Oh, you know, when you get dealt."
Wait, do the accent.
Drain souls.
There we go. Much better.
You win 51% of time. And so he'd have these things like there's 1% advantage, 3% disadvantage, things like that, and put these up, and people just wouldn't believe them. But you know, this is what they are. But of course, these are across all categories too, so they can be really misleading. In that, for beginner, maybe that means that for beginners they win 75% of the time or 100% of the time, but then for advanced players they win, you know, 20%
of the time. So were you surprised that he exposed the mechanics that much? Because in general, I haven't seen a whole lot where game designers come out and say, if you use this combination, you'll win 3% of the time.
Well, remember here, it's not quite like that in that you don't have the choice of what you're dealt.
True.
So it's more like poker, you know. It's kind of, depending upon what your opening hand is, you know, understanding your percentages relative to other hands and that sort of thing. I think it's closer to that than...
go ahead.
And Alexei, I think his instincts are to be more protective of the data than my instincts. I'm usually very open with it and want to tell people strategy, because I think for a good game, the more strategy and information people have, the better experience the audience is going to have. But he's been very receptive to that. And so when we talk about getting data, he gives it to me, and then you know I'll ask him if we can share this, and he usually doesn't have a problem with that.
So it all came from you guys? The players themselves didn't figure out this particular combination?
Well, they can't. So let's say players think that such and such a card is broken. Like, when they get dealt this, they just win. You know, there's no real way for them to build up any statistical evidence on that across the entire player population.
Other than playing it themselves.
So, yeah, no, they can't. You know, they just say, you know, type on a forum, oh, this, blah, 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 and or blah, 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 blah.
Even their personal experiences is in some ways irrelevant. Like, just because I lose all the time to...
Doesn't necessarily mean that it's the card's
right.
fault.
In fact, if I get frustrated with a card, and this happens to everyone, I'll start getting a little crazy and playing poorly against it. And of course, that increases the number of chances I lose. And then when I do lose, it's a big thing, because I've got this theory, it's supporting my theory. And when I don't lose, then
it's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah, exactly.
The best way to suspect that there's... the other reason why, you know, publishing these sorts of things doesn't really make that much difference is that there's a lot of skill in this game. And there's a lot of luck and a lot of skill, and at the really high levels, you get these people that will kick your butt no matter what you draw, and that's somewhat surprising. Like, if you looked at the system and you played through the first couple games, you would certainly assume it's more random than it is. You probably would about poker.
So what did you see on the forums that surprised you?
Sorry, what did I see?
Yeah, like, what were the players saying that was surprising to you? Was there anything? Did you
no?
Call
because
everything?
We come from. We come from, Magic and D&D and Pokemon and whatever. So there's no possible thing.
No possible surprise,
right? You've got these games with large, fanatic, erratic, unbalanced audiences. So anything can happen.
But so which character class people particularly liked didn't surprise you? I mean, there was nothing...
I don't think so. I wouldn't characterize anything as a surprise.
Note out there to the player base, you guys need to work harder to surprise Richard and Scaff, because, you know, sounds like they're getting a little too complacent.
Well, I think I've incorporated the surprise into my outlook, but I think I was genuinely surprised by how difficult it was to convince a lot of people that a non-collectible game was just fine.
Interesting. Because they really wanted it to be Magic?
Yeah, and... Yeah, exactly. I think that they were looking for a different game, and I think the way this game is presented, you know, makes it look like it's a trading card game. So we misled their expectations. So in some cases, we asked for that, but at the same time, there's so many non-collectible games that you would think that people would understand that more easily.
Well, especially in computer games, I can understand why if it were a physical card game that they'd be more surprised that it wasn't collectible. But
yeah, that's true.
In general, well, strategy.
I guess when I say collectible, I should say customizable, where they've got more customization possible, because we only give them 6 customization options.
Now that makes sense in general.
Yeah, now 9
with the new expansion.
Where are those?
I believe the new expansion is available at www.spectromancer.com. That's SPECTROMANZER.
Awesome. So if you have one other thing, what's the one thing you want people who have not played Spectromancer to take away from this podcast about?
That they should go to. No, sorry.
I think I got that. I think we're good on that
one. No, I really, it is sort of what Richard's saying before is, you know, if you like strategy games at all, really of any kind, I mean, it is a free download, you know, to get the first part of it. You can even play multiplayer for free. So, you know, you're not losing it. You know, go check it out. Tell your friends to go check it out. Play around with it a little bit and keep your mind open because it's I think the depth of play will surprise you, and especially with the alternating arena now for multiplayer play, it's really, really, really fun to you know, sort of just have to restructure all your strategy thoughts and decisions, you know, as the base arena changes.
Well, yeah, Richard?
I'd like to say that if you haven't tried it, you should try the free sample. And the free sample certainly may be enough for you. It's a very generous sample. You can play, I mean, people played, and as far as I know, still play the free character classes, and it's a perfectly good experience with just that one class. But the thing which excites me most about this game is that it's in this category of games which I'm passionate about seeing more of, which is that games that are sort of not paper games, not traditional board and card games, but not all the way to simulation, like a shooter or really a real-time strategy game. This feels like a paper game. It feels like a traditional board game, but it uses the computer in a very effective way.
So it emphasizes the markers of being a game.
Yeah, and so another, we talked about Quadradius on this podcast?
I think we did, yes.
Okay, so I posted an article on Quadradius, but Quadradius is another game that I would put into that category.
I think actually Quadradius might be our next podcast. We've already taped the Quadradius podcast, but
oh, have we? Oh, that's right. We had Jimmy. That's right. In fact, or should we say our last one? It depends. What do we post these in?
Yes.
But yeah, so there's this small list of games which fit in this category of feeling like traditional, feeling really like a game when you play it, not like a simulation. And I'm really excited by those games.
Yeah. Hopefully we'll see more of them. So on our last podcast, or possibly 2 podcasts ago, depending on if you post the Quadradius one, we promised you we were going to talk about games and narratives, so I think we'll do that next time.
Correct? Sure.
Or is this going to be the eternally deferred discussion?
And since no one has any idea what order these things are going to get posted in, then you can go back and solve the puzzle.
Didn't we talk about games and narrative last time?
Well, Scaff promised to... tell us about how games and narratives were like an unhappy marriage, and I objected that he had no romance.
And you may have actually already heard that podcast by the time you're listening to this one.
And
maybe it's coming up.
I feel that Scaff has no romance in his heart, but we'll see. Anyway,
certainly my wife says that.
All right, so we will see you next.
How would she know?
And as it gets more and more disturbing, and we learn more and more about Scaff than we ever wanted to, we will see you next time on Games with Garfield. Say goodnight, guys.
Goodnight, guys.
Goodnight.
Goodnight.